At the end of every Sabbath, if you're here, when we close out the Sabbath on a Saturday night, during the Havdalah service, the conclusion of the Sabbath, while the candle is still burning and the cup has been poured, everyone recites these words together. The cantor does most of it, but everybody says these words together. Everybody says, the Jews had light, gladness, joy, and honor. So may it be for us. These words, recited every week, actually come from the book of Esther. And as you know, yesterday was Purim. And in fact, today is actually still Purim in walled cities. Because what happened was Queen Esther approached the king a second time and asked for a one-day extension for the Jews of Shushan to avenge themselves on their enemies. And the king granted her request, right? And in Shushan and walled cities, the Jews were given an extra day. And so Purim, the festival, the glad festival of Purim, is actually celebrated for 2 days instead of one, even to this day if you live in a walled city. Even today. So it's still Purim, actually. Purim, you know, when you think about the festival of Purim, it's a peculiarly Jewish celebration in that it's not one of the appointed times that we find in Leviticus 23. It's not one of the holy festivals. It's not a Sabbath. It's not a Moed. I think of it as a specifically Jewish celebration, celebrating a victory over what can only be understood as anti-Semitism, early anti-Semitism. And because of that, because that's what it's about. The Purim story has retained relevance and currency through the ages as one people after another, one Haman after another, one nation after another has risen up to destroy the Jewish people. So, well, in that sense, because of it, you know, it is this peculiarly Jewish festival, Purim, it's kind of strange as a Gentile to be celebrating Purim in that sense. Maybe not any more than it's strange to be a Gentile celebrating Judaism and practicing Judaism in a general sense, but according to the theology, the traditional theology of historical Christianity, you know, I mean, well, forget Purim. Those of you who are Gentiles, you shouldn't be here today, you know? Shouldn't be doing this Sabbath stuff and this Torah stuff. And actually, according to that same theology, those of you who are Jewish shouldn't be here keeping Torah either. So it kind of goes both ways. Christianity and Judaism both agree on this point, you realize, that Gentiles shouldn't be doing Judaism. So, what are we doing here? Well, the Master, he says it this way. He says, come, follow me, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And he binds us with words, he binds us with the cords of love to even the smallest commandments of the Torah, his Father's commandments. And he says that if we love him, we will keep the commandments. And he beckons us to follow him in the paths of discipleship. And he places us among his people Israel. He joins us all together into one flock. So we find as natural children and as adopted children, we are in the same family and then celebrating the same celebration, such as the happy and glad occasion of the festival of Purim. Still, Purim means something more, I think. It means something more if you've been on the receiving end of the historical brutalization of the Jewish people. The blood-soaked story of Purim can only really be appreciated from a Jewish perspective, a perspective that has seen the Crusades, the pogroms, the ghettos, the deportations, the Inquisition, the Holocaust, and most recently the ever-rising crescendo of Muslim hatred. To Jews, Purim still has relevance in today's world, you understand, because there's still many Hamans trying to annihilate the Jewish people. And in the last century, the most notable Haman, obviously, was Hitler, so much so that the Hebrew word for Nazi today is simply Amalekite. Haman, the Agagite, was a descendant of King Agag, king of the Amalekites. Hitler And the Nazi party came in the spirit of Haman and the Amalekites in the same sense that John the Baptist came in the spirit of Elijah. And the spirit of Haman, the spirit of Haman is a demonic spirit, the spirit of Satan, the dragon from the book of Revelation, as it says in the book of Revelation. Then the dragon became furious with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring. And the most painful question in the face of this history, Jewish history, in the face of persecution and the Holocaust, is this question, of course. Where was God in all of this? The book of Esther is a curious book. It's unique among the books of the Bible in that it's the only book that never mentions God. God doesn't show up in the book of Esther. God's name does not appear a single time in the entire Megillah, the scroll of Esther. And this might be by design. In Deuteronomy 31:18 it says, "I will surely hide my face in that day." And the Hebrew word "I will hide" is astir. The word astar, spelled the same as Esther, means "I have hidden." And in the events of the book of Esther, God is hidden, working behind the scenes. But His purposes are nevertheless being accomplished, as we see by the end of the story. One of these hidden mysteries of the book of Esther, the story of Purim, appears in the Hebrew text of the scroll, where in the list of Haman's 10 sons, there are several Hebrew letters that appear smaller than the other letters in the text. Let's look at that together. If you could turn your Bible to Esther 9:6. Haman had 10 sons. And in Esther 9:6, we read, "In Susa, the citadel itself, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men, and also killed Parshandata and Dalphon and Asbatha and Paratha and Adalia and Ariditha and Parmashta and Arisai and Aridai and Vizata. Ve'et Parshandata, ve'et Dalphon, ve'et Asbatha, ve'et Porata, ve'et Adalia, ve'et Aridata, ve'et Parmashta, ve'et Arisai, ve'et Aridai, ve'et Vayazatai." These are the 10 sons of Haman, the sons of Hamaditha, the enemy of the Jews. "But they laid no hands on the plunder." That's what it says, okay? I read it to you in the Hebrew because last week after the Sunday night class, Bill Harvey reminded me of this amazing feature of this passage, that when the list of the names of Haman's 10 sons appear in the actual scroll of Esther, the names are laid out, they're written in parallel columns with that ve'et, ve'et, ve'et on one side, and then the names of the sons on the other side. It really sticks out like it's a poem or something in the middle of the scroll, you know, because it's this textual feature in the scroll, but it's not a poem, you know, it's a list of names. And Bill reminded me of something that's like a Hebrew code that lies hidden in this passage. Because if you look at the three, at the list of Haman's sons, the list of his 10 sons, three of the Hebrew letters in this list are written smaller than the rest of the Hebrew letters. So as you look at the list, you'll see three smaller letters. It's the Tav of Parshandatha, the Shin of Parmashta, and the Zion of Vizata. Those three letters, put them together, and Tav, Shin, Zion, and they spell the word Tashaz, which as far as I know is not a word. But it does have a strange significance. I don't know if you've ever noticed this in the reading of the Megillah, but there's kind of a comical moment. We read in Esther 9:7, just here, we've just read, that these 10 sons of Haman were killed on the first day of Purim. Now, the strange thing about that is that if you keep reading then, we'll just keep reading, when Esther goes in before the king to request a second day of Purim, Purim Shushan, the Purim for walled cities, she requests that these men be hung, which is strange, since they're already dead. It's kind of odd. Look at this, verse 11. That very day, the number of those killed in Susa, the citadel, was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, "In Susa, the citadel, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and also the 10 sons of Haman. What then have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled." And Esther said, "If it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict, and let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows." So the king commanded this to be done, and a decree was issued in Susa, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. It's kind of like having a prisoner beheaded and then confining him to a cell and put on a diet of bread and water for 40 days or something like that, you know? Our confusion regarding how, you know, you have these dead guys and then you're going to have them hung, you know, our confusion is actually a misunderstanding about gallows. We are picturing gallows in the style of the Old West, where a noose is put around a man's neck and he is hung dead. That kind of mode of execution. Esther is talking about gallows of the ancient world, the Assyrian type gallows the Babylonians, the Assyrians, and the Persians employed, which were really sharp stakes on which a corpse is impaled as a public display to everyone. So the 10 sons of Haman are dead, and Esther's requesting that they be publicly displayed. Nevertheless, it's a strange passage. They're already dead. What's the point? Verse 13, again. Esther said, "If it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict. And let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows." She says, let the Jews be allowed tomorrow to do according to this day's edict. Now, in Midrash Tanhuma, the sages comment on her use of the word tomorrow. And they explain, there is a tomorrow that is now, and there is a tomorrow which is later. I want to tell you about the tomorrow which is later. What I'm telling you about this passage, this is not my own research. This is not my own invention. This is easy to find documentation on. The suggestion is that Esther's tomorrow referred to a tomorrow of the future. Has to do with that mysterious word. Remember the three little letters? The three little letters in the sons of Haman's, the 10 sons of Haman, Tashaz, Tav, Shin, Zion? Doesn't have to be read as a word. Those three letters could be read as a date. They could be read as the year, the Jewish year, 5707. Now, as you may or may not know, the Jewish calendar does not reckon the years from the date of the birth of the Master, but rather reckons it according to what the sages suppose the year that creation had occurred. So this particular year that began last Rosh Hashanah, right now, it is the Jewish year 5768 today. So, according to the Jewish reckoning, the year 5707 is the year 1946. In 1946, the Nuremberg trials were underway in Nuremberg, Germany. The trials were war crime trials before a military tribunal during which several key Nazi officers responsible for crimes against humanity and the Holocaust were being tried. And the first and best known of these trials was the trial of the major war criminals, which took place before the International Military Tribunal, which tried 24 of the most important captured leaders of Nazi Germany. And on October 1st of 1946, the first of the verdicts came forward. And 12 of these 24 were sentenced to death. Now, ordinarily, war tribunal, this would be done by a firing squad. That's military protocol. But the judges of the trial insisted that these particular men who had masterminded the Holocaust and committed such serious crimes against humanity were not worthy of the military honor of being shot by a firing squad. Can you imagine that? That's very low. So you're not worthy of being shot. They wanted them hung on gallows. 12 men to be hung. One of the men, however, was not present at the sentencing, and due to a legal loophole then, his execution was suspended. So 11 men to be hung on gallows. The night before the order was to be carried out, one of the men committed suicide in his cell, which left on October 16th, 10 men to be hung on gallows. Perhaps the most wicked and demonic of these 10 men was the renowned anti-Semitic Julius Streicher. Streicher was responsible for making anti-Semitism the core value of the Nazi Party. He had labored to unite anti-Semites into the Nazi Party, doubling the size of the party, earning Hitler's lifelong gratitude. He was a publisher of an anti-Semitic periodical with a circulation of 500,000. And he published, he also was responsible for running a publishing firm that published children's books, anti-Semitic children's books. He revived the old blood libels. He is the largest player in creating the amazing public sentiment, the public hatred of the Jewish people in Nazi Germany. And an American reporter who was chosen by lot to witness the execution of these 10 men, including Julius Streicher, he wrote a description of this hanging, and I'm going to read you a portion. He wrote about it. He said, "As the guards stopped him," this is Julius Streicher, "at the bottom of the steps for identification formality, he uttered his piercing scream, 'Heil Hitler,' and the shriek sent a shiver down my back. As its echo died away, an American colonel standing by the steps said sharply, 'Ask the man his name.' In response to the interpreter's query, Streicher shouted, 'You know my name.' The interpreter repeated his request, and the condemned man yelled, 'Julius Streicher.' As he reached the platform, Streicher cried out, 'Now it goes to God.' He was pushed the last two steps to the mortal spot beneath the hangman's rope. The rope was being held back against a wooden rail by the hangman. Streicher was swung suddenly to face the witnesses, and he glared at them, and suddenly he screamed, 'Purim Fest, 1946. To the amazement of everyone watching, when they hung him, he would not die, but he hung there alive. And so the hangman had to finish the job. What did Streicher mean with the words, 'Purim Fest, 1946. October 16th, 1946 was not Purim. It was Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day of the festival of Sukkot. Hoshana Rabbah means the great salvation. What did he say? Purim Fest, 1946. For. Remember Esther's request? Esther said, "If it pleases the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict. And let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows. There is a tomorrow that is now, and a tomorrow which is later," the sages explained. The 10 sons of Haman the Amalekite were hung again. The book of Ecclesiastes says, "What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun." And these things were concealed. The year 1946, 5707, was concealed in the list of the 10 sons of Haman that were hung. And God Himself was concealed, is concealed. He conceals Himself. The name Esther means, "I have hidden." The Master says, "There is nothing that is covered, that will not be revealed. He says, there is nothing hidden that will not be made known. He says, what I tell you in the dark, say in the light. What I whisper in your ear, proclaim from the rooftops. And he says, do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. There is more that has been hidden that is waiting to be revealed. Turn to Esther 8:15. Because we have not, you know, at this point in time, I don't believe we have come to the end of the whole Megillah. History is still unfolding. The scroll is still unrolling. But we can read ahead. Remembering there is a tomorrow that is now and a tomorrow which is later. Purim Fest 1946 is the tomorrow that is now. But let's take a look at the tomorrow that is later. Esther 8:15 says, then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white with a golden crown and a robe of fine linen and purple. And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. I believe this is a vision of the coming of Messiah. This is a vision of the coming of Yeshua. He comes forth from where he sits at the right hand of the king, at the right hand of the Father. He comes forth from the presence of the king in royal robes, and a golden crown is upon his head, and he comes in robes of fine linen and purple. And it says in verse 16, the Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. When King Messiah comes, he comes for his people. History will correct itself. The last will be first, the first will be last. What is concealed will be revealed, and the Jewish people will be the head and not the tail. That's what it says in the Torah. The brothers of King Messiah will have light and gladness and joy and honor. Messiah is coming for the Jews because he is the Messiah of Israel. I believe this passage in Esther is a prophecy of the coming of the Messiah, a portent for the children, a glimpse of the future. It says, in every province and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict reached, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. There will be gladness in that day. And the king's command will reach every province and city. This is what it tells us in the prophets. The king's command will reach every province and city. How so? It says the Torah will go forth from Zion. That is the king's command. The king's law will go forth from Zion. The word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And all nations will say, come, let us go up. It will be a day of gladness. A day of joy. A day of feasting. A great banquet. A table will be spread in Jerusalem. A table at which all nations will be seated. The table of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The verse goes on to say, and many from the peoples of the country declared themselves Jews, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them. And who are these many? These are those from among the nations who have attached themselves to Israel, have declared themselves Jews, not by ethnicity, but through adoption. Adoption of the religion of the Jews, the religion of the Bible. They have taken up the yoke of the Torah, the God of Israel. Not under compulsion, not with permission, not with anyone's permission. They have taken it upon themselves because they wanted to be counted as the people of Mordecai. To be among the people. The people of Mordecai. You know, for myself, I want to be counted among the people of Yeshua. Practicing the religion of Yeshua. And that is why I, as a Gentile, have taken the path of Messianic Judaism. Because I have, so to speak, read ahead in the Megillah to see what is coming next. I've read ahead in the prophets to see where this is all going. To try to see what is behind the scenes. And to see what the kingdom of King Messiah looks like. So for the Jews who hear these words, I think you should be proud that you are Jewish. And that Messiah belongs to you. and that He is the revelation of that which is hidden, and your history and your people have a beautiful future. And for the Gentile followers of Yeshua from Nazareth who hear these words, it's like we say at the conclusion of every Sabbath, along with all Israel. We say these words from the book of Esther. We say the Jews had light, gladness, joy, and honor. So may it be for us. Shabbat Shalom.